This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, it's 7:06, Monday the 29th of May, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Philip C, Mark Tan, and I'm Wong Xiaoning. Now, in about 30 minutes, we'll be speaking to Luca Santos, currency analyst at ACY Securities, on why currencies are notoriously hard to forecast and also the direction of the Malaysian ringgit. But in the meantime, let's recap how global markets closed last Friday.
The US markets closed all in the green, with the Dow up 1%, S&P 500 up 1.3%, and Nasdaq up 2.2%. In the Asian markets, the Nikkei and Shanghai Composite both up 0.4%, the Hang Seng down 1.9%. The Straits Times Index closed flat, marginally down 0.01%, and the FBM KLCI also flat, marginally up 0.04%.
So for some insights on where international markets are heading this week, we speak to Tim Waterer, Chief Market Analyst at Cole Capital Markets. I think we have to talk about the deal that happened over the weekend, because House Speaker, US House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and President Joe Biden have agreed to a debt ceiling deal in principle. Can markets and all of us now breathe a sigh of relief, or are there more hurdles to overcome?
Yeah, well, I think the big issue is, of course, what's been giving markets some headaches the past month is really, what happens if the US does default on its debt obligations? What would be the ramifications for, say, the US dollar, for example, and US treasuries? And so I think, it could very well be a seismic event, possibly even a black swan event, if the US were to have its credit ratings downgraded, they couldn't meet its debt, there could be fallout in the US dollar, US treasuries. And I think that could spread across other markets as well, in terms of, the risk-off theme, impacting markets. So that is really what's been in the back of traders' minds. And while it has been a remote possibility, there's still been an outside chance of that occurring. And so that's been keeping risk sentiment in check. This tentative deal, I think we will see a deal of some sort get done, and they should avert disaster, to put it that way. Until they sign on the dotted line, there still remains this outside chance that, we could see a sort of, this kind of black swan event should the US default, which would be a big deal in financial markets.
Tim, let's shift our attention to the bullish sentiment on the Nasdaq, where the tech trade on US stocks looks to be back in town, driven by the fervor over AI. Is this rally more hype than hope, or is there real substantial sustainability to this momentum?
Yeah, well, that's right. Nasdaq's been on a tear recently. It's its fifth straight weekly gain last week. I think it's been fueled by, in part, some better than expected earnings during the recent corporate earnings season we had. And another reason, I think, is because US regional banks have been in trouble since mid-March. And so traders have been looking elsewhere to park their funds. And the tech sector, cropped up by advancements in AI. Obviously, ChatGPT has been in the headlines for the past several months. And we had NVIDIA, obviously a chip supplier to the AI industry, their stock jumped 25% last week on good earnings and good forward guidance. So, and they're even closing in on being maybe a $1 trillion market cap company, and that's quite a elite company at this stage. Only five others there at the moment. So obviously Elon Musk has been talking a lot about AI. Maybe he'll launch a competitor to the likes of, Google and Microsoft. So there's a big focus on AI development at the moment. So with that in mind, and other companies, of course, are also looking to incorporate AI into their industry, including finance. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there going forward and the role of AI in the investment sector. So I do think there's more upside momentum there. I don't think AI is going anywhere anytime soon. I don't think it'll be a linear upward path, though. We could even see some consolidation going forward from the likes of NVIDIA and the tech sector in general. But yeah, to answer your question, I think there is certainly more room to run for the tech space, fueled by that AI growth.
Where are the specific opportunities for AI beyond NVIDIA? Because NVIDIA really has taken up all the limelight. Are there other AI opportunities there in the market?
Well, you're right. NVIDIA has sort of been stealing the limelight. And obviously that upward revision they had on their, their forward guidance is what captured the market's attention. They're sort of dominating the chip space at the moment, and obviously there's a big focus on this, AI learning models. So I think, yes, that's capturing the headlines right now. I think traders will be looking sort of, okay, how else can we get in the, get in on the act in terms of the AI industry? And so going forward, I don't think it'll be limited to just these, tech companies. I think we'll also see some expansion into other industries.
All right, let's talk about oil prices. A little bit on the soft side on a year-to-date basis, down 8% for WTI, which is currently $73 a barrel. What's the reason for this softness?
Yeah, well, it had an interesting week last week. We had the Saudi energy minister sort of talking up the price with a warning to short sellers, and that was sort of backtracked a little bit when the Russian deputy PM poured cold water on that to a degree by essentially saying, look, we had production cuts announced in April, only took effect this month. And so that's sort of taken the wind out of the sails of the oil price, in recent times. And obviously it's been, weakening as well on the softer Chinese recovery story as well. So that hasn't done the oil price any favours either. So we do have the OPEC Plus meeting coming up on June 4. I'd like to be a fly on the wall for that meeting, given the contrasting views we have from Saudi and Russia just last week. So it'll be interesting to see whether there is a unified response coming from that OPEC Plus meeting in regards to, potentially more, production cuts going forward, or maybe it'll just be trying to talk up the price in the interim. So it'll be very interesting to see. But I think one way or the other, we could have certainly some implications for the oil price when we get some remarks following that meeting.
Now, Tim, China's industrial profits tumbled 18% in April, indicating that economic recovery seems to be faltering. Given their status as a major trading partner, how do you foresee the impact of this on Australia's export growth to China?
Yeah, well, that's right. The Chinese recovery story certainly hasn't been going quite according to plan so far. I guess the most recent numbers we had have been, fixed asset investments, industrial production, retail sales, all missing the mark. And, I guess particularly concerning is that spike in youth unemployment. In terms of the Australian economy and how that fits in, well, Australia has been, subject to, a lot of import bans from China for the past few years. So the impact on the Chinese slow recovery hasn't sort of translated into losses in Australia yet, because we're already, constrained by these import bans. In fact, we're just starting to resume coal exports to China now. So I think it's fair to say that Australia will be one of a number of economies hoping to see some better macro indicators from China going forward. I do think Chinese GDP probably can get to the 5% target of the PBOC this year. Whether it can get much higher than that or not, I guess that's a big question. And that's what's creating some nerves at the moment for not only Australia, but all other countries dependent on a strong Chinese economy.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. There's Tim Waterer, Chief Market Analyst at Coal Capital Markets, telling us about the repercussions if the debt ceiling, of course, which a deal has been reached in principle, if it doesn't materialise, because there are still hurdles to overcome. But let's talk about aviation. That's a top theme today, right? Because we're going to be talking about it at 8:30 a.m. and then again at 9:30 a.m. when we are doing pressing matters. But there is news coming out of China.
Looks like a historical weekend for China, where the first domestically produced passenger jet had its maiden commercial flight from Shanghai to Beijing. Now, the airplane called C919 is produced by Commercial Aircraft Corporation of China, COMAC, and the state-owned company is targeted to have 10% of domestic market share over the next 3 years.
Well, it's a very interesting place to enter, because the market that they are entering in is really truly a duopoly involving Boeing and Airbus. Of course, people here know about the Airbus A320neo and the Boeing 737 jets. Right. Whether or not this Chinese-based commercial carrier can eat into this duopoly is to be seen.
But isn't it a function of the fact that they can, because there's just no planes available for sale, right? Because Boeing and Airbus, in terms of their order book, completely booked up to, I think, late 2030, late 2040. So if you're an airline and you want a plane, what are your options now?
There's a production backlog for sure, because of this whole revenge travel, this resurgence of air travel since the pandemic. So that's why you see Boeing and Airbus struggling to fulfill the order. So perhaps it's an opportunity for COMAC to come in and really take some market share. At the moment, of course, China itself is such a big market. Perhaps they can even just meet the domestic market, but you never know. Many of China's friendly neighbours in Africa, South Asia and such could also find an interesting market there.
But correct me if I'm wrong, currently only the Chinese authorities have given it the stamp of safety, right? Which is, I think, essential when it comes to aviation. But up next, we'll cover the top stories in the newspapers and portals this morning. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast
from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.